Hey gang, Kevin Strange here.
It's Jeremy Daniels.
And we just want to tell you that for the month of March over at Patreon, we got Jorek and the Shog of Steel in full, commercial free, ready to be heard, the audiobook. And a little later in the month, we'll have Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik also available to listen to before they air on the Reading to Strangers podcast. There's also discounts for books. My new book, I Died in a Bed of Roses, just came out, and you can get a pre-order discount on that book if you sign up for Patreon.
So if you're getting a Kevin Strange book, you might as well do the $5 of Patreon, because you get the book for about the same price and all this additional content as well.
Plus, you get your name in the dedication page as a special shout out to patrons in the book itself, and you know,
much more.
Yeah.
Hey Kevin, what do you want to do about this podcast intro
for Reading to Strangers?
Yeah,
I was thinking we download this broody ass music, and then you'd be like, "Read to Strangers." I'd be like, "I don't want to read to strangers." I'd be like, "Read to Strangers." I'd be like, "I don't want to read to strangers." And then I shoot myself in the head. Pow!
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like, with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit.
Yeah, but like, Reading to Strangers.
Reading to Strangers. Reading to Strangers. No, that's a terrible idea.
Welcome back to another episode of Reading to Strangers.
He's Kevin of the Clan Strange.
He's Jeremy of the Clan Smallcocks.
Yes.
Set yourself up.
Bunch of mean son of bitches.
The Smallcocks.
Overcompensating for their small cocks.
You set yourself up for that one.
Let's just say we cut anyone who's bigger off. So.
We, what do you do with them after that?
Eat them just like you do when they're still attached.
Welcome back to Barbarian Month, gang. Week 2 of Barbarian Month. And the final show before Horror Hound Weekend.
Yes, it is.
So, it's been a long time since we've been on that road piece.
Yes, it has.
And a lot of things have changed. Last time I was on the road, I owned a publishing house.
Mm-hmm.
I used to sell a lot of other people's books, but ironically, I think we were talking about last week, I have 17 Kevin Strange books as we're going out on the road with. I think that's more than any... I think that's more books than we ever had for sale when I was selling a bunch of other people's books.
I think so. Yes, it was hard to fill up the little squares of the flyers sometimes.
Yeah. So that's cool. So we've been going on long enough now that I have 17 books for sale. That's a lot. That's a big number.
I made
7 movies, and to have 17 books for sale. Now, there's a couple things that are overlapped. Like, we're selling my mini Strange book collection, which is stories that are featured in my short story collections, but with their own covers. They're mini chapbooks. They're very small. And I actually was inspired by when I drove out and did Brian Keene's show. We traded a bunch of books, and one of the books he gave me was this little mini Chappie that was like 4x6, and it was only like 50 pages long. It was a short story, but I thought it was awesome that it had its own cover and everything, its own synopsis on the back. And I was like, you know what? I have a ton of short fiction. Like, I had like stories like Loch Ness Lay and Holy Matrimony that had covers. But I only ever released them on Kindle. They were too short. You know, you can't make that. If you tried to make that, into a full size book by itself, the thing would be like 13 pages long, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, well, fuck yeah, I can release those as little mini chapbooks. And one of the other ones that I have is The Witch Who Fucked Christmas. That's only released in a Strange House anthology that I don't even own the rights to. So I haven't had Witch Who Fucked Christmas published at all. I had it on a PDF you could download from the website, but it's not even a Kindle book because it's got a giant dick on the cover.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to put, you know, try to play games with Kindle and get the thing pulled for having a giant dick on the cover. So when I realized I could do many Strange books, the little chat books, I decided to do that one too. And then another book, The Last Gig on Planet Earth, It had I don't know if you know this or not, the very first thing I ever did as a publisher was I created a hand-stapled chat book for Last Gig on Planet Earth.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I took it to a fucking convention. Yeah.
It looked like you were handing a report for college or something like that.
That's exactly what it looked like. But since then, it's only ever been available in the Last Gig on Planet Earth collection. But it's never been its own book other than that little chat book. And I think there was maybe 50 copies of that little chat book ever made. So I did it up as a little chat book too, because it actually has two. It has an alternate cover. I actually had the cover artist, Carrion House Luke Spooner. He did two variants. He did a variant cover in addition to the cover you see on the Last Gig collection. So I used the variant cover on the little mini Chappie. But that's only four books. You know, if you exclude those,
that's still 13.
Yeah, that's still 13. Individual books that are for sale on the table. So I'm excited because I've never toured Texas Chainsaw Mantis, and I think the very last show I did, I had copies of Murder Stories, and that was it. I've never toured All the Toxic Waste from My Heart. That just came out in September, and I think again at that last show, I think I had copies of Computer Face. But we had originally released it as Stranger Danger,
yeah,
with Danger Slater's Roadvolution. So as a standalone Computer Face, I think I've only ever had that at like one convention. So there's a ton of stuff on the table that fans have never seen. And fans is a big question. Are there going to be any Kevin Strange fans left out there on the road?
I mean, from what I seen last time, I would think there is. I mean, we pushed a lot of books, and there's a lot of people that, I mean, there'd be times that you were gone and I was the only one at the table selling books that people would just walk away. I'd wait until Kevin gets back because they wanted signed autographed copies.
I just wonder how many of those people are even going to still be fans, you know?
Well, I mean,
how many of them have moved on? How many of them have bought into the internet hate? The internet hate of Kevin Strange. It's going to be interesting to see, isn't it?
Yeah, it should be fun. We'll have a good time no matter what.
How many people are going to walk by and go, "Oh my God, it's Kevin Strange. You know what I heard about him on the internet?"
I don't know if it's that famous. We're going to have random people walking around. There's a couple people that, if they heard what's going on from the time we did, that might not be too happy with you. But there's going to be some people that don't give a fuck. I mean,
my guess is it's going to be mostly people that don't give a fuck. Single human fuck.
A horror convention.
Is a human fuck different than another kind of fuck?
Yes. I don't know. There's like 73 genders. Do we get into different gender fucks?
No,
as well.
I don't think anybody out there is going to give a single human fuck.
It doesn't seem like the crowd. I mean, you were always well received. Matter of fact, the first one we went to, you were like rock star received.
Yeah, people used to really like me out there. That's what I'm wondering. It's been a while. Will it even be the same people out there?
I'm sure not a lot of new faces.
There'll be a lot of the same vendors. It's like a caravan of barbarians.
Carnival almost.
Yeah. And we kind of we all sort of go travel around to the same shows.
Yeah.
So there's a big Midwest circuit is what I've always traveled, and that's Chicago, St. Louis, Kansas City, Indianapolis, where we're going, Cincinnati, up in Columbus there's shows. And then down in Louisville, Kentucky, and Lexington, Kentucky, and Atlanta, Georgia, and Nashville are like that. Those are like the key Midwest con cities. And the vendors, you know, I still, when I was on social media, I haven't been on social media in a long time, but when I was still on social media, I saw a lot of those same people still did the circuit.
Well, now that Kennedy will be there.
Yeah, Todd Kennedy and
we'll see pictures and maybe new pictures of his family.
I hope so. If you haven't seen pictures of Todd Kennedy's family, you need to check those out.
Definitely.
But, it'll be, there's a few things that I won't be able to do that I'm always bummed out about. Like, every time we're going to a convention, while I'm telling this story, pull up the celebrity guests at the show. One of the things that always ends up bumming me out is I'll start looking at this, the film screenings and the celebrities and everybody that's going to be there, and I'm like, man, I'm stuck at a table.
Yeah.
And the last couple of cons I went to, I didn't get a table.
Wow, a new one popped up.
We'll talk about them in a minute. The last few shows I did, I just went as a fan, And I guess it's I guess it would be true for anybody. I had so much more fun at horror cons just as a fan that could
really? Go around and not sitting at a table trying to sell books.
Not sitting at a table trying to sell books. Weird. Now I do love that. I do love hanging out.
I know, but we had fun doing that. Let alone if you just had the whole day to run around and do whatever you want.
But check out the couple of really big things that I'm going to have to miss because I'm going to be selling books. Ellie Church is starring in Albert Pune's brand new science fiction film, and I never know the name of it because it's this big, long, convoluted name. The Guardians of the Civil War, something. No, it's a play on Guardians of the Galaxy and Civil. It's Interstellar Civil War. It's something about Guardians and Interstellar Civil War. But anyway, I really want to see that. Albert Pune's going to premiere that. I'm going to miss that because if they air it after the convention closes, I'm there as fuck. And then Brian Williams, Ellie's husband, is premiering his brand new film, Space Babes from Outer Space. And he's been showing me trailers and some of the scenes from it privately. And man, the movie looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
They filmed it on location at Night Moves. The Night Moves strippers are going to be hanging out at the show, maybe selling. I haven't heard anything in weeks now about the calendar, about whether they're going to still going to want to sell the calendar at the table or not. But he filmed it on location at the Night Moves strip club. And man, it just looks like a ton of fun. The movie, he shot it as a throwback 1980s titty party movie. And fuck, the music he's got for it, the way he shot it, the lighting, and the acting, it just looks like it's going to be so much fun. And that one probably will premiere after the vendor area closes for that. So I'll probably definitely be partying it up in that screening room watching that. But who else is going to this fucking show?
Well, Negan is going to be
there. Oh, shit, son!
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
That's going to be a biggie.
Yeah, that'll be insane. Yeah, I hadn't seen that until recently. Tobin Bell.
Okay, from Saw.
Saw, yeah. John Waters, Friday performance only. I think he's showing The Filthy World.
Yeah, well, this Filthy World, I think it's a spoken word performance.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Chandler Riggs, Coral.
Yeah, Coral from The Walking Dead.
Jesus, Thomas Paine.
Okay.
Austin DeMello, he's on Walking Dead too. He's
big Walking Dead cast.
I can't think of the name of the dude. Yeah, there's a couple different like panels. I'm gonna have like the Walking Dead American Horror Story panel.
Oh, that's cool.
The Psycho panel, or Bates Motel.
Okay.
Dennis O'Hare, he is he's been on. The hotel, did you see American Story or American Horror Story Hotel?
Mm-hmm.
He's the
it's the one with Lady Gaga, right?
Yeah, the cross dressing bell man.
She show her ass in that show?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
She does?
Yeah, a little bit.
Awesome. As we were talking about last week, I'm a big, big butt fan. I'm a big, big butt fan. Not a big, big butt. A big, big butt fan.
Nestor Carbonell, he's the sheriff on the Bates Motel.
I wish my name was Nestor.
And Max Thera, Booger.
Yeah, from the
Revenge of the Nerds. Yeah, I think they're having
and a panel. Ogre also, right?
Yes, Ogre as well.
And Ogre is not only from Revenge of the Nerds; he's also from motherfucking Bloodsport.
Yes, he is.
This is Jean-Claude Van Damme, one of my favorite movies ever made. Listen then, to the Watching with Strangers podcast and get that joke.
Then Wilford Brimley, which I was surprised he was alive. The guy from Cocoon.
That's interesting. Isn't he the old guy?
Yeah, the old guy from Cocoon.
What? He didn't end up. Man, they do this with some of the celebrities, man, where they're old as fuck, but they need money.
Yeah.
So they'll fucking like wheel them in wheelchairs and have their like shaking hand. Like Okay, so Angus Scrimm, the tall man from Phantasm, he didn't die until like 2 years ago. But back in like 2007, I saw him at a horror con, and that motherfucker was so old. You understand, he was old in Phantasm in the 1970s. That motherfucker was so old. I felt so bad for him. And he still lived another almost 10 years.
Yeah, I met that. Miss Carmichael from Superman.
Yeah.
Carmacher.
Yeah.
Miss Carmichael.
Miss Carmacher?
Yeah. At a Superman celebration.
Yeah.
And it was bad.
She's old as fuck.
Yeah, and she also had a lot of problems, but...
You remember what was his name? Durant from Darkman?
Yeah.
That motherfucker was old as fuck. He was probably 400 pounds. And I don't think I've ever told this story on the air before, He was like, I saw him at the show, and I was like, oh man, he's looking bad. He's old. He's looking in real bad shape. And I went to take a piss in one of the bathrooms. And a lot of times, I'll just go in the bathroom stall and piss just to
look at penises.
That's what I'm saying. I go in the stall so I don't have to look at penises. And in the stall next to me, I heard, oh, oh, oh. And I was like, man, there's only one person at this convention that could be making sounds like that. It's got to be Durant. And I fucking, when I came out of the stall, he was coming out of the stall too. And he, I think he died like 6 months later. He was in bad shape. Another old celebrity that I saw was, what the fuck is that guy's name from Maniac Cop? With the cherub's disease, the big fucking blockhead. I forget his name. He's got a weird name.
Yeah,
it's a really easily recognizable name, and I can't think of it. It'll come to me. But he did shows all the way up until the very bitter end, and he was looking terrible when he checked out. These guys book so many shows all up into their old age that most of the time they're booked at a show when they die. And the show has to announce that, you know, so-and-so is no longer going to be appearing because they're dead. I'm excited about the show. The show's next week. And like I said, like we've said on the show before, we're going to try to get some interviews maybe for the show, some flavor. We'll see what happens. If you follow us on
Instagram. Robert Zadar.
Robert Zadar, that's right. If you follow us on our social medias, I'm sure Jeremy's going to be taking pictures, posting it to the Reading to Strangers Facebook page.
Yeah.
I'm personally not on the Facebook, but I will be posting
video. Yeah, it's hurtful.
I will be posting a video from... that's facebook.com/readingtostrangers. I haven't plugged that in a while.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
We've had the same amount of likes for...
If you want to follow the comings and goings of Strangeville, as it were, the best place to do that is facebook.com/readingtostrangers, and Jeremy will take care of any of your Reading to Strangers needs over there. I'm going to be posting from my personal... I'll probably post from my Instagram, take videos and stuff, and some Snapchat stuff, but I'm not even really big on those things anymore, to be honest with you. It's been 3 months since I did anything on social media of any consequence, and it's just one of those things where it's like once you finally tear away from it and realize that life goes on and you don't have to have your nose stuck in the fucking getting that fucking fix of brand new data every 10 seconds from people you don't care about, and knowing that what you're looking at is a fake, you know, manufactured version of their life that they want to present to the world, it's like Big Brother is so here. Big Brother is in our fucking face every day. There's a new Tom Hanks movie getting ready to come out called The Circle. And it's all about how they put cameras everywhere. And that people... The premise of the movie is Tom Hanks is a mad scientist, basically. And he believes that people act better when they're being filmed. So he works on the technology that can make cameras small enough and wireless. So they can literally just plop down cameras everywhere and be recording and presenting everyone's lives to everyone else at all times, and it's somehow going to create a utopia. And of course, it's not how it seems. There's like dark rooms. There's like, because the character or the movie stars, what's her name from Beauty and the Beast, Emma Thompson, and John Boyega from the black stormtrooper from the Star Wars Episode 7. And there's like a scene in the trailer where John Boyega pulls her aside and he's like, things aren't what you think they are. Things aren't what they seem. And of course, there's a whole, you know, dark world behind the scenes of this immersive social media world, basically. And basically
Demolition Man.
Personally, I like living in the dark world. Personally, I never thought I would get to a point where technology... I mean, I've been on the internet. I did a show with Ben, a Random Strangers episode, where we talk about how long each of us have been. Because Ben's only 20, so he's had this internet that we have now almost his whole life. Like, when he was in fifth grade, people had MySpace pages. So, you know, I grew up in a world when this technology didn't exist. I was a first adopter. I was super excited about the internet when it first popped up. Do you know how many freaky ass girls like to get crazy on webcam back when webcams were very first a thing.
Yeah, then people had to ruin it.
Goddamn son.
Charging for it. Or
goddamn son. There were some freaky ass bitches on there.
Yeah, like the old chat groups where you just got dirty picture after dirty picture.
That's what I'm saying. You get in those chat groups and know what you did. This was the fucking, and I talked about this in the other show too, but this is the jam. This is how you do it. You go into those chat rooms, but you, like, the names would have a little picture of a camera next to them if they were on webcam.
Yeah.
You look at the, you right click it, you look at the profile. If it's a hot chick and she has a webcam, start chatting that bitch up, right? I think my first webcam was like $40.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a lot of money back when I was in my 20s. Not that I have a lot of money now, but I have way bigger disposable income now than I did when I was in my 20s. And I fucking dropped dime on that fucking webcam just so I could be like, look, I have one too. And I fucking wanked it to so many webcam girls back in the fucking late 90s, early 2000s, my friend. I would, this was back before, this was before free long distance on cell phones. So I would fucking go buy prepaid phone cards so you could call long distance. You know, it was cheaper to buy phone cards in with bulk minutes than it was to use your long distance on your phone. So I would be chatting up these girls on phone cards while fucking they were diddling themselves on webcam. And these chicks were from all over the fucking country, all over the world. And it was this brand new technology. I loved the internet when it first came out. And now, it's like our moms are on the internet. It's not, I don't want to be in a place where my mom, where our moms hang out. That's fucking lame. I feel like the internet is for lame people now. And if you're like cool, you hang out in the dark world. You hang out off.
I don't know. I mean, it's all where they share it. Facebook for like my daughter's age group. They all have them, but they're fake, so their parents can monitor them Facebook.
Their fake lives.
Yeah, now Snapchat and Skype and stuff like that is where they, probably something else I don't know about, that are where they're all hanging out because the parents haven't caught up yet. I mean, my ex is big with, like, following my daughter and everything. I just like, no. As long as somebody's checking in on her, I'll be all right.
Yeah, that's why I like Snapchat a lot. And I've talked about this before on other podcasts. Is Snapchat is like, and the technology exists now where you can save things and it's not as disposable as it used to be. But it was originally created as a technology where it was private. It celebrated privacy. So when you took pictures and sent them to people, the pictures disappear as soon as the people look at them. And if they try to screenshot them, it alerts you. So it's this idea of having private conversations with people over the internet. And I much prefer hanging out on there than
I do. It's because you actually got dirty snaps. I never got any dirty snaps.
Yeah, I get dirty snaps. Are you kidding me?
Never.
You know, if you looked at my Snapchat list, my Snapchat list is probably 50 people and there's probably 4 dudes. it's like 46 chicks and 4 dudes for a reason.
Well, you're on mine. Twisted's on mine.
Yeah, I follow you, and I follow Twisted, and I follow Brian Williams, and that's about all the dudes I follow. Everybody else is a bunch of chicks that I enjoy having conversations with. So, yeah. I don't know why I got off on that.
Episode 2, the finale of The Shog of Steel.
Jorek and The Shog of Steel. So last week, we ended off with Jorek stuck up on a fucking mountain.
Bad
shit. His fucking Shog of Steel... His moon blade has been morphed into a giant block attached to his shoulder, and he's having a bad time. He's up there baking in the sun, trying desperately to move this giant mound of rock, and he's pretty much stuck there, dying of dehydration. And we ended the last episode with him sort of passing out.
Yep.
Passing out from exhaustion after having his arm removed, all his men... to his knowledge, have been killed down the riverbank, and the lich has stolen his arm and morphed his prized blade that's been in his family for 3 generations. It's turned into something ugly. So this next part, the last part, the final part of Jorek and the Shog of Steel, we will find out if he makes it off the cliff, if his men are truly dead, and if the lich is going to get the best of Jorek. So,
dum, dum, dum.
Until the other side of the hour, we give you Jorek and the Shog of Steel, part two.
What's up, you reader fucks? My name's Kevin Strange.
And this is Travis.
And we're here from the Watching with Strangers podcast, because there's other things in the world besides books, too, you bookish fucks. We review cult movies. What kind of cult movies do we review, Travis?
All kinds of cult movies.
Like what?
Cultists of the cult, including Cult from the Future.
Cult movies from the future at kevinthestrange.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever other podcasts fuck, you fucks. When he awoke the next morning, two things were apparent. The first, his fit of self-inflicted rage had little effect on the connection between the metal and his arm, aside from some superficial cuts and bruises. It seemed his strength was about that of a baby dingus during his night of fevered thrashing. More importantly, though, it was quite clear he would not survive the day. While his fever had broken sometime in the night, he was severely dehydrated. His lips were already split open and completely dry, smacking together like two worn pieces of parchment. Utterly exhausted, stuck on a rocky slope with no shelter in sight, with no food or water, body fused to a giant hunk of metal, he simply closed his eyes and waited to die. Even a barbarian as mighty as Jorek could only overcome so much before his spirit broke. Laying there, baking under the heat of all three suns, he prayed to the gods and readied himself for the great passage to the next realm. That's when he heard it. Water. Running water. The river. Close, too. The ridge he lay on must have only been 30 or so yards above the river bank. Jorek straightened his sun-soaked head, pulling against the hunk of moonsteel, but he could not see over the ridge. If he could make it to the water, he could survive. He could heal. He could avenge his warriors. And then he heard them, moaning, broken, yes, but as his last memories had shown him, the Lich Woman hadn't killed them. She'd maimed them. She'd left them for dead, but at least some of them were still alive down there.
Help! Help me!
Jorek tried to scream, but his throat was as dry as the underside of a mulk. No sound escaped. He would die here then, just a stone's throw away from those who needed him, from those whom he needed in return. Together, they could live. Apart, they would all surely perish before the third sun set for the night. The Lich was keeping them alive, but why? Why not just kill them where they lay? If he was going to ponder the motives of the actions of the undead woman, why in seven hells would she bind him to a giant hunk of moonsteel and leave him to die? It didn't matter. Not at that moment, anyway. Not if he wanted to live. And he did, he realized. He did want to live for his men. He needed to live so that they may live as well. He was their king. King Jorek would not die at the hands of a dirty lich, nor from the heat of three suns. He wouldn't die from the heat of a thousand suns. Shielding his eyes with his free hand, he surveyed the ridge, looking for something, anything to free himself from the weight of the moonsteel. The rocky surface was host to scant shrubbery, loose stones, and little else. Then he spotted it, a broken tree branch, dropped there by some passerby, raiders maybe, or Trodek herders. It didn't matter. What mattered was that Jorek got a hold of it before the three suns baked him from the inside out. Using his boot, he kicked at the stick, barely missing with the tip of his toe. He strained against the heavy hunk of metal, pulling against his shoulder until he was sure his arm was about to rip free from its socket. Finally, after another few failed attempts, Jorek managed to kick it close enough to grab it with his free hand. Exhausted, starved, and overheated, he jammed the stick on the far side of the metal, giving himself the mechanical advantage with his body weight as he attempted to roll the huge block over. The stick
bowed against the tremendous force as Jorek sunk every drop of energy into pulling it until it splintered, only moving the block of metal ever so slightly toward him. That was enough for Jorek to get his free arm around the thing and use the momentum to pull it over on top of him. He didn't worry about burning his flesh. Moonsteel did not become heated under direct sunlight. The metal edges jutting up from his shoulder rested against a slightly higher point on the ridge, allowing him to slide his body underneath the bulky structure, finally finding cover from the merciless suns. There, under the shadow of Moonsteel, he curled his legs into his chest, wrapped his free arm around them, and slept, praying he would not dream. Mercifully, he did not. He did, however, wake to a tugging sensation against his lip. Keeping calm, he opened one eye. A Trodek had stumbled into his makeshift encampment. Jorek was in luck. The gods favored him this day after all. With his free hand, Jorek snatched the lizard by its long neck and smashed its head against the rocks before the poison-tipped talons on its 16 legs could react. Ripping the head off the creature with his teeth, Jorek drank its blood heartily until he choked and coughed the green fluid all over himself. Snapping a talon free from its poison sac, Jorek proceeded to gut the animal and eat its organs raw. Satisfied, he turned his attention back to the matter at hand. Judging by the placement of the suns, he'd slept the entire day away. Two were already set, with the biggest, closest sun only a few hours behind them. Fully rested, fed, and hydrated, Jorek made his move. He braced his free arm against the rocks, sliding his feet firmly apart. He proceeded to push with all his might against the Moonsteel until he'd managed to stand fully erect. With the full motion of his body and his rejuvenated energy, he was able to slowly drag the slab of steel over the rocks, bringing him closer to the top of the ridge. Curiously, the sound of the river had ceased. A low chanting and wet flopping sound had replaced it. What sort of magic, Jorek wondered, could hide the sound of a river? The answer came soon enough. Moonsteel slab in tow, Jorek reached the ridge peak, giving him full view of the river valley below. What he saw left him breathless. The sound of the river was gone because the river itself was gone. The flopping noises were the fish-like dondons flapping their prehensile water wings around, trying to find it again. A 300-yard swath of now dry land lay between two 20-foot-high roiling waves standing motionless, one at each end, as though some giant invisible god had parted the river with its hands and stood patiently waiting for whatever came next. In the middle of the riverbed stood the Lich Woman, along with all of Jorek's warriors. They yet lived! There was still time to save them. His band of mercenaries numbered 13. They knelt, hands bound behind them, in a semicircle facing the Lich, who stood with her back to Jorek. Behind each warrior was a tall, cloaked figure. In their hands, the figures held long blades to the throats of his men. At the Lich's signal, the figures drew their blades across those throats in unison. Fountains of blood sprayed across the dondons, painting the river bed with crimson death. The bodies of the warriors slumped over one by one. No! Jorek's screaming gave away his location, but the anguish surging through him as he watched the murder of his people caused something else to happen. Suddenly, he could feel his arm again, or more accurately, he could feel the Moonsteel connected to his shoulder. It felt like a limb of its own, instead of dead weight straining against his body. At once, he knew he had control of it. Just as easily as he would his own elbow, he willed the thick hunk of steel to bend. Groaning, the Moonsteel folded in the middle. Astonished, Jurek took his newfound will over the object a step further. He envisioned a set of fingers with his mind's eye. Immediately, three points the size of small swords jutted out from the end of the metal. Jurek opened and closed a fist with his new digits. No longer did the metal arm feel like a burden. Now it felt like a powerful weapon. A weapon he would use to smash the Lich and her minions to pieces. Eyes wild with fury, Jurek lifted his giant metal arm and smashed it back down onto the rocky ridge, using the momentum of the shockwave to launch himself into the air, high above the carnage in the riverbed. Extending the arm down and enlarging the hand as though the actions were no more than a flick of the wrist or the blink of an eye, Jurek landed in the circle, smashing two of the tall hooded figures into mush.
"Woman, you have not yet known suffering," the enraged barbarian said, shrinking the metal arm back to its previous size.
The jutting spikes coming from all sides of the moonsteel swayed like the tendrils of a sunrook, and were just as deadly. The rest of the hooded figures gathered around the Lich.
"What took you so long, barbarian?" she asked, sneering at her foe.
Seething, Jurek sent a pair of the tendrils out, felling the two figures closest to the Lich in one quick strike without ever taking his eyes off of his dead warriors.
"Was one wizard really worth all of this death?"
"Haramond," the Lich laughed. "You think this was about that, old man? Haramond was a heathen and a heretic. This is about you, Jurek. You and your Shoggoth blade."
Jurek looked down at his metal arm.
The moon blade? What mockery have you made of my most precious weapon?"
"The Shoggoth steel did not come from the moon, silly man. It came from a place far from the simple minds of your people. A beacon, a warning for what is yet to come, a tool to destroy us all."
Suddenly, another hooded figure fell. Roaring, Jorek's gorilla man climbed to his feet. Nirod yet lived. The wound on his enormous muscled neck had not been deep enough to end his life. Even with a broken arm and leg, he was unmatched in size and strength. Now the beast man tore through the hooded figures, dropping them with single powerful blows until he stood side by side with his barbarian king, panting and nursing his wounds.
"It is good to see you again, my friend," Jurek said, embracing the gorilla man.
Their reunion, however, was short-lived. The hooded figures stood again. Some of their hoods and robes had fallen away, revealing a nightmare patchwork of rotten corpses, multiple heads and limbs jutting this way and that from their bloated bodies. The Lich had created a zombie army.
"Kill them all," Jurek whispered.
Nirod roared again and stomped toward the nearest zombie, grabbing it up by the leg and using it like a club as he beat the zombie next to it into a pulp.
"We're going to need those,"
Three Tits said, smirking.
"You've lost, hag,"
Jurek said, extending his metal fingers into one long blade.
"Concede defeat and prepare to join the wizard in hell."
Jurek lunged at the Lich woman, but the blade stopped inches from her face. The barbarian strained against some unseen force, but could not run the evil witch through. The arm would not obey his command. Stubbornly, he continued to push forward, digging his heels into the soggy riverbed.
"I will kill you."
"Not today, barbarian. I need your strength. I need your rage. A far greater evil than I, far greater than anything this world has ever seen, is coming. I need you to help me stop it."
Jurek strained against the metal, shoving with all his might, but even with his attention on his metal arm, he could feel his loins stirring again. He found himself glancing at the Lich's cleaved bosom.
"Never. I'll never help you."
Three Tits knelt down and scooped up a handful of dead warrior's blood from the puddle formed at her feet. She splashed the thick liquid across her face, arms, and chest, bathing in it. When she stood, her form was no longer corpse-like. Her true mortal beauty showed. She was a young woman with pale skin and features that made Jorak's knees weak and cock hard. The only thing giving away her sinister identity was the hole in her chest separating her breasts. Her killing wound could not be hidden by sacrificial blood. She stepped past Jorak's blades, resting her soft hands on his bare, straining chest.
A race of beings called the Old Ones have marked this world as their own. They sent the Shoggoth metal here as a probe, as a test, but we have mastered it, you and I, Jorak. That is why I've done this to you. I needed you to find the power to command the Shoggoth steel on your own, to realize its mighty power, as I have, that we may control it together.
She brought her face to his, brushed against his lips.
It is true. Haramond hired me to protect him from you, but then I saw you and your men in action. You are the most powerful warrior in this land, and I am the most powerful witch. Together, we shall protect our world. Light and darkness, the sun and the moon. Together, we shall protect our world. Light and darkness, the sun and the moon. Together, we will vanquish the Old Ones and rule side by side forever.
Jorak tried to push away, but the witch woman ground her body against his cock.
My men, you killed them,
he said, feeling the hatred drain from his body. She smiled again with full cheeks and teeth, her radiance disarming Jorak of whatever fight he had left in him.
Death is boring. We will raise your men when the time is right. They will fight alongside us against the horrors descending on this realm. They will fight and die again and again. Glory will be had by one and all. This I promise you.
Jorak let his lust overcome him. He wrapped himself around the woman, kissing her deeply. Slowly, the metal blades melted away. The arm softened, covering both their bodies in liquid metal. Nyrod smashed the final zombie into green goo and retreated back to where his king stood.
Sire!
Standing motionless in place of the warrior and the witch was a tall metal statue, the very same red-headed dragon beast from Jorak's fever dream. Suddenly, the invisible force holding back the river on both sides vanished. The two colossal waves rushed toward one another. Nyrod scrambled out of the way, reaching the bank and rolling to safety just as the waves met, smashing everything between them. Then, just as quickly, the river settled back into its normal course, as if nothing had happened. The dead warriors, the pulverized zombies, even the statue lay hidden beneath the waves. After a time, Nyrod stood and limped away. Saying prayers to all of his gods, he left his king to his chosen fate. Under the river, inside the monstrous statue, the two lovers, locked in their embrace, dreamed of horrors beyond imagining, and waited.
Hey gang, we are back from the break. That's it for Jorak and the Shoggoth Steel.
That is.
So I kind of played myself. I had no idea when I wrote that story that there was ever going to be more Jorak. But funny thing happened. And maybe I've talked about this before, but I know I was going to save it for this show. So I think I may have just barely touched on it. But when I wrote Jorak, called Lich Tits at the time, and I got kicked out of that anthology, I scooped it up and just plopped it into the All the Toxic Waste from My Heart short story collection. And when editor extraordinaire Sean Ferrari was editing the book for the first time in however, whatever it was, 5-6 years of working together, mm-hmm. and, you know, 17 books, at the time, like 15 books, he has never once said this. He called me up and said, I don't want this Lich Tits piece of shit in this collection. I was like, what? Because he's never said anything like that to me before. He's like, I think this is subpar. I don't think this is as good as the other stuff you write. I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, this is one of the coolest things I've ever written. I've never done it. And I explained to him the whole sword and sorcery based on Conan the Adventurer.
And knowing Mr. Rosetta. Ferrari, I'm sure he just said, okay, and I don't like it.
He said, yeah, and I don't like it. And I said, well, I'm going to have to override you on this, man. I like this story. I don't want to not. I'm not going to not put my barbarian story in a collection. Like, I want to go. I'll fall on the sword for this. If people shit on it and say it's a piece of shit, then that's my fault, and I won't blame you at all. And he's like, all right, well, just on record, this is subpar. This is subpar strange. I said, all right, brother. I want you to, you know, don't ever think I don't want you to tell me that. I want your honest opinion every time, and I'm not offended by this or anything. I absolutely want you to tell me that, but I am going to override you on this. You know, on this, I'm going to include this story in the collection. And I'll be goddamned if the collection didn't come out and the first few people that bought the book and finished it came back to me and said, yeah, man, that Lich Tit story is badass. That's my favorite story in the collection. Two people within the first week of the release came back and said that Lich Tits was their favorite story in the collection. And I screenshotted the fucking conversations and showed them to Sean Ferrari. He was like, look, bitch, what's up now, bitch? And when I told him that I was going to write more Jorik stories, he's like, oh, fucking great. More of this barbarian bullshit. Like, he is not into Jorik at all, which I think is funny. But I had enough people tell me that they liked the story that I started thinking about, and I think I had mentioned this way back in a January show. I was like, what if Jorik and Guts from my Vampire Guts series, what if they're really the same person on separate timelines? So in a completely different universe, Guts is in a post-apocalyptic Earth, but then Jorik is on an entirely different planet in a different universe. It's got three suns. And he's, you know, in a barbarian world. What if they're actually the same soul in different universes? You know, so if there's multiverses, the souls project into those as different people. You know, there's the same person in the soul, same personality, projected as different aspects of themselves in different multiverses, right? That's the idea behind the multiverse theory. And so I was like, what if they came together? What if there's a dimensional portal and Jorik and Guts fight in a novel? And so I got this crazy idea. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. Because I've got one more Guts novel to write. And I believe it's called Vampire Guts in the Splatter City. And then, or Vampire Guts in Splatter City. And then a Jorik novel called, well, the next Jorik thing that I'm going to write as a novel is actually the... okay, so I'm sorry.
Blackball.
Give me a second here. So there's Jorik and the Shaga Steel. Next week we start Jorik and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik. And then the third in this series is called Jorik and the Black Wall. Now, that's a collection of Jorik stories. The first full novel is called Jorik and the Mad King, and it's going to go back to his childhood, and it's going to tell the story of how his father gave him the moon blade. And as you now know, the moon blade isn't made out of moon at all. It's actually Shoggoth steel sent as a probe. This is what the Lich tells Jorik at the end of Jorik and the Shoggoth steel, that it's actually a probe that's been sent to this planet by the old ones, the Lovecraftian old ones, like Narelhotep and Azathoth and all those big nasties, Yog-Sothoth. And so they are en route, and it may take them 1,000 years to get to the planet, but they are en route following their probe, you know, following their beacon to this planet. And that's how they choose the planets that they're going to corrupt and destroy, is they send these metal Shoggoth probes throughout the multiverse. So the way this story ends, Jorik and the Lich are both encased in the Shoggoth steel waiting for the old ones to appear, because now Jorak has gained control of his Shoggoth steel to the point that he can manipulate it and turn it into anything he wants. That's where Jorak's story ends on the current timeline. There's one more Guts novel. Vampire Guts and the Splatter City, where that novel ends, a new novel called Jorak is it called Jorak and the Blood God? Jorak and the God of the Guts, I think is what it's called. Something like that. And it's the novel where Guts ends up coming through a portal into Jorak's world, the three-sunned planet that the old ones are en route to. Guts is actually going to be there.
I like how you're asking me about shit that you haven't written yet.
but I'm writing one novel each in the series before I get to that crossover one. But for Jorak, it's actually a prequel where they're going to talk. It's a prequel about his childhood and how he inherited the Moonblade from his father. And if you remember from this story we just listened to, there's a little throwaway line where Jorak says he had to strangle his father to death because he'd been infected by a rabid Scree, I think is what they're called. I don't know what the fuck a Scree is. I'll have to figure it out when I write the novel. But that's so I'll have a collection of Jorak stories, and I'll have a prequel novel of his childhood, and then the third one is the crossover, and then for Guts I'll have Vampire Guts in Nuketown, Vampire Guts in Splatter City, and then the crossover one. So there'll be five books total: two in the Jorak series, the collection and the prequel novel, two in the Vampire Guts series, and then the crossover. So five total. What do you think of that, Jeremy?
Pretty awesome.
It's kind of an epic.
Yeah, one of my personal favorites is Vampire Guts. Yeah. I just liked it. It was a good story. It drew you in.
So the Splatter City one is going to be badass too. It's a. There's no reason to talk about it now. I haven't written it.
Yeah.
So it could be a year, could be two. I'm guessing these books, at best, the two.
The final one's coming out about the same time as the current Logan movie is set. 2026. No.
I'm looking to write. I'm going to write them back to back. I'm going to write the Jorak book, the Jorak prequel book, Jorak and the Mad King, and Vampire Guts and Splatter City back to back for a 2018 release. I'm saying that the crossover novel probably won't come out until 2019, but I may get a hair up my ass and just write that one. I might write all three of them back to back to back.
Okay.
So the next Jorak, the next Guts, and then go right into the prequel novel. So you might see all three of those books in 2018. I don't know yet. I have about four more books to write this year before I can start on those. But, you know, I'm just letting you guys know the future of Jorak. So when I say I played myself because I wrote Jorak into a situation with the Lich where they're going to go to sleep and conceivably sleep forever until the old ones arrive. Well, clearly Guts is going to mess that up. And so I when I wrote Jorak and the Shoggoth Steel, known then as Lich Tits, I thought it was a throwaway story. I didn't think I would ever mess with that barbarian ever again. So that's why this next week's story, Jorak and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik, and Jorak and the Black Wall, the third story in this collection, are prequel stories. They're stories that take place before Shoggoth Steel, clearly because Jorak and the Lich are encased in the Shoggoth Steel incubating, waiting for the arrival of the old ones. Or the arrival of Guts, and is what's actually going to happen. So I had to write these as prequels, but I kind of needed to because it was such a throwaway story, Shoggoth Steel, that I didn't really know the character, and I sure as fuck didn't know Trina, Nirod, and Aurelius.
Yeah.
So when I sat down and wrote next week's story, Jorak and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik, it was really with the intention of fleshing out these characters, Jorak, but also his companions. I really wanted to know the backstory of Nirod, why the fuck he shaves half his body, and Trina, where she came from, and Aurelius, and what his deal was. And so I wrote Swamp Phantoms of Ik to sort of learn about those characters. And then the one I'm writing now, Jorak and the Black Wall, It's a. It's not a pre. It's not a. It's not set. Where in Jorak's childhood, but he has an interaction with the ghost of his father, and so you learn about that relationship between them just enough to set up the novel, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to go back in time and actually experience that contentious relationship between his between King Jorak and Jorak the Junior, who's our Jorak. And so that's what's fun about writing The Black Wall, is I get to learn a little, just a touch about the relationship between him and his father before I go back in time to that stuff. So lots of good barbarian stuff coming up in the future, gang. Can't wait to get this stuff out. If you haven't noticed, I'm super excited
about it. Yes, you are.
So I've got a cover artist in mind to do the cover for the collection.
Yeah, you showed me some of his work.
And it's weird. It's really weird. It looks like it looks like a kid, like the guy. I don't know how old the guy. I don't know anything about the guy, but he looks like he would have been influenced by like the art of like Mike Judge and Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah,
very weird, very kind of gnarly looking, like heavy metal kind of Dungeons and Dragons heavy metal kind of look. And I don't mean Heavy Metal Magazine. I mean like heavy metal music. Like yeah. A lot of his stuff is like, you know, heavy metal music inspired.
Yeah, I kind of thought of it as like Judge scribbling just fantasy novels is what it looks like.
Yeah, like Mike, like if Mike Judge was doing fantasy novels.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool, and I think it'll give Jorak, the covers of Jorak books, a really unique look, because I don't want to go the Frazetta route, you know, because every... I mean,
it's going to be hard to do anything to top that, so you have to go a different direction. I mean, the quality, during our last show, I was just looking at some of them, because I had my phone open, looking at some of the art, and you're just like, that could be in my house. That would be in my house. That, I mean, that looks like museum quality paintings.
Oh my God. There was a convention a couple of years back.
I went there with you.
Did we talk about that in the show?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, yeah.
Where Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, he brought originals. Mm. And there's a story that, who the fuck was it? Spielberg?
It's when we ran into Tech Nine. I mean,
yeah,
Tech Nine.
Tech Nine and the Green Ranger. They were both fanboying out on each other.
Yeah.
There's a story in the documentary Painting with Fire about Frank Frazetta, where I believe it's Steven Spielberg went to his house and told him he'd pay him $2 million for one of his originals, and he would not sell it. One of the things about Frazetta was he hung on to almost all those paintings and wouldn't let them go, the originals, and they just kept, just by orders of magnitude, increasing in value because he wouldn't come off of them. And today, the fact that Robert Rodriguez has them is a lot of money. Like, he probably hired a one of those fucking... truck, the fucking what do they call them? Not safe trucks, but what are they? Where they transport money?
Yeah, Brinks truck.
Yeah, like a Brinks fucking security.
Armored.
Yeah, like an armored vehicle company to transport those, because he was probably.
I was thinking entrapment with.
Yeah, he was probably displaying, no joke, probably $5 million worth of paintings. Whenever he took those around, and he probably had them insured, and probably had them in fucking.
But you couldn't get real close to them.
No, they had them roped off, and they had security, you know, standing there, which is badass. But
sucked. I wish they'd put them in like plastic, like, you know, damage proof cases, so you could get closer. So the detail is just insane.
Well,
and you're standing 15 feet away trying to.
Did we talk about the 2 weeks ago about how he did most of those paintings in 24 hours?
Yeah.
Fuck. So anyway, I want to avoid that. Like, you can't beat the master, and there's no reason to imitate the master. There's a lot of other people in the indie book world that also do barbarian stuff. My buddy Craig Mullins, he dabbles in barbarian stuff too, and the stuff that he's had published, the guys that published that, they do like Frazetta knockoff covers and stuff, and I just don't want to go that route. So I wanted to find somebody really weird to do the covers for it. So I'm super fucking
excited. I think it's going to have a neat look.
Oh, it's going to have such a
weird sitting at a show with like I Died in a Bed of Roses next to a barbarian sketched out like that. It's going to catch people's eye.
Yeah, it'll be cool, man. So I'm really looking forward to showing you guys, especially next week. I'm so hyped because nobody's ever heard this. No, you know, this will be the first reading we do, audiobook we do, that doesn't have a written counterpart published before.
Yeah.
So, which is, it's going to be really interesting to have this collection of stories played as audiobooks before the actual book comes out. And that might end up being a trend we continue. We might end up playing you guys some of the books before they become...
We've talked about having a good mix, doing older stuff for the fans for a while and staying on top of stuff and getting ahead of...
This is as ahead as you can get.
Yeah.
Stuff that's not even been published.
It's going to be a bit before it gets published.
Too. Sean hasn't even read
I know.
Swamp Phantoms of Ix, so...
So...
Yeah. I'm excited. So...
Oh, I bet.
Next week is Horror Hound weekend, so we are going to probably time travel. We'll probably record that week's episode before the show. So the following week after Horror Hound will be our Horror Hound report. Maybe some interviews maybe while we're there.
And you know, if we get some good long interviews, they could be thrown up as special episodes as
on the behind the Patreon wall or something.
Yeah. Or you know, maybe half and half, yeah. So you can hear it and then if you want to hear the conclusion.
Y'all are playing yourselves out, I'm telling you, on the Patreon. I don't understand why people are so elusive about dropping $1 a month on a paywall. Like, I get it. We all want the free stuff.
Because we're not showing our buttholes.
All the podcasts that I listen to are free, too. I get that. But, I mean, we do so much content behind that paywall that nobody hears. Like, that Twisted CD review, as a test, just to see, that was supposed to be a paywall episode. Yeah. Which means two people, we have two patrons right now, two people would have heard that episode. I left it free just to see how many people would actually listen to it. You know, it's gotten hundreds of downloads as a free podcast.
Yeah.
You guys understand that everything behind the paywall is just like that.
Yeah.
Everything behind that paywall, and that paywall is $1 a month.
Yeah, and it's not just that. I mean, the podcast, you know, you stay pretty much in touch. I mean, most of the stuff we do for Patreon is stuff we wouldn't put up normally for the Reading to Strangers because it doesn't really apply to what we do with Reading to Strangers. It's who we are and what we like kind of stuff. But just the bonus material from your website that you get. I mean, if, like, one of my favorite authors, if he does this kind of format with his stuff, if for $1 I could get everything before and just listen to it, I mean, you know, I'm impatient.
Ad-free?
Yeah, I'm impatient, so... You know, it always seems to stop exactly where I was actually getting into the part I was curious about.
For sure.
Yeah, it'd be no problem throwing $1. And, you know, especially if you're already a Kevin Strange fan that buys his books all the time. For that $5 mark, you're getting basically the discount off the book, the new book, when it comes in, what you're paying per month. So
yeah, and it ends up being a wash. If you buy all my books... You get by the time you've gotten the discount on all the books that come out in a year, that's paid for your Patreon membership.
Yeah.
Just by adding the discount. Like right now, you can go to patreon.com/KevinTheStrange, pay $1 to get access to the promotional code that gives you $5 off of I Died in a Bed of Roses.
Yeah.
So instead of paying $15 for I Died in a Bed of Roses, you can pay $1 for Patreon and get it for $14. I'm sorry, get it for $10. So you're paying $11 total for a $15 book. And you know what I mean? It's like, that's a steal. Y'all gotta quit playing yourselves. I don't know if it's a Patreon thing. Like people don't want to, they're not familiar with it enough to trust it to give it their credit card information.
There's a lot of podcasts out there that's making bank off those. And not doing as much stuff.
Yeah, we're not trying to make bank. We're just trying to provide supplemental material and getting a little bit... Because what we could do is we could go out and we could try to find advertising for this show and bury the show in advertising that pays advertisers that pay us.
Yeah.
And then we're at the beck and call of that advertiser and we can only talk about things that are advertiser-friendly. And then you guys as an audience get stuck listening to all these ads or having to fast-forward through them. Why do that when you guys could just... pay the paywall dollar or five or ten or whatever you want to give us, get access to all that content, and you never have to worry about ads.
Yeah. You don't ever have to worry about getting us stopping in the middle of a story that you're really into. You get the whole story as soon as we post the first episode.
Completely ad-free. It's just the beginning of the story to the end of the story, no matter how long or short it is.
So it's basically free audiobooks or discounted audiobooks.
Anyway, I'm going to try to push that real hard out on the road. We'll see what happens. We'll see how people... Well, I want to see what people say in person. Like, whenever I say, oh, and you could throw us a dollar on Patreon, I just want to see what the reaction... Like, hey, why don't you go suck a dick, Kevin Strange? I'm not going to... You know, I don't know. It's just weird. I mean, it is what it is, but I think we're done. I think we're done for the week. You got anything else?
Nope.
All right.
Gonna enjoy next weekend. Not this real next weekend. No. But...
All right. Well, next week, Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Ick, part one. This is going to be awesome. We'll see you later, gang. Remember, keep
16 bars, Kevin Strange.
Keep reading.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.